We are doing 1 Samuel, and we're in the middle of the second chapter, right? I checked the website, and they got everything recorded through chapter 2, verse 10. So we're going to start at chapter 2, verse 11. Here's the modern Hebrew, Moedon Ivri, which Moedon means club. And you'll know the Hebrew word Moed, appointed time or season. And from Ya'ad to appoint, so Moedon is a word based on that root, which means club Ivri, Hebrew. So club Hebrew, in English it's a double entendre, that's the joke. See, it's a club that you meet and also you try to club Hebrew to death. You got it? I'll say that every once in a while just to reinforce it in people's minds. I thought it was humor. Hebrew, it's not. There's another word for the club that you actually hit. But anyway, we are going through the book of Samuel. If you want to look at the website, you just click on the seminary website, type in Hebrew Club, and you can see the previously recorded sessions. We started with the story of Joseph, Genesis 37, and worked all the way through the second half of the book of Genesis, from 37 all the way to the end. And we did that over the last year. And so we started Samuel late spring, early summer, and got through the middle of the chapter. So we're going to keep reading in Samuel. It's a very interesting narrative. And you, if you follow along with me, you'll just see a lot of interesting characteristics of biblical narrative and interesting points of grammar and syntax. I would encourage everyone who's new here, this is different than lecture at lunch in that you can ask questions. And, of course, I will always ask Sim and Michael and whoever else, you know, to parse verbs and things like that for us. But if you have questions about the text, feel free to ask them here. All right? So I'm going to proceed the same way. I'll read the text, translate it, point out a few things, and then throw it open. All right? So we're starting with verse 11 of chapter 2 after the song of Hannah. Remember, she had dedicated her son Samuel, and then she sang this song. And here's kind of the aftermath of that event. Vayelech el kanah haramata al beito. Vehana'ar haya mesharet et yawet pnei eli hakohen. Okay, Vayelech. Then Elkanah went from Halak. Vayelech is from Halak. Then Elkanah went haramata to Ramah. All right, remember that's that region in Ephraim that we saw a form of this in the first chapter. To his house. So notice you have the locative hay on Ramata, and then you have al, kind of to specify more specifically the place. So notice two different ways that Hebrew says what in English we would say to. See, to Ramata, to his house. You could also use el. Remember, al and el are very often transposed. Here's another example. Okay? So notice you have the atnak after beto. So you're kind of starting a new thought with beth ha na'ar. And the youth was mesharet, was serving, from sharat, to serve. This is a pl participle. So notice the youth was serving et Yahweh, was serving Yahweh, et pene. Et pene is equivalent to lifne, before. See, it's literally at the face of Eli the priest. All right. Now notice the verb form haya mesharet. Notice that this is what you learn this term in Greek. This is a periphrastic form. Notice that it's not an imperfect. It's not a perfect. It is the perfect haya plus a participle. It's very interesting, these forms. They occur about 124 times in the Bible. When you get to later, the late biblical Hebrew, when you get to Mishnaic Hebrew, they become much more common. But you also find them in earlier texts, like Kings, like Samuel, texts like these. And so it's possible that you're seeing an example of more colloquial or spoken kind of speech, language creeping in here. All right. So they're not terribly uncommon in early biblical Hebrew as well. They're normally translated in English with this progressive or durative sense. So that's why I translate the boy was serving rather than the boy served, which, by the way, I think is also a possible translation. All right. But just notice this characteristic, because you probably haven't run across this before.
How often does that occur back in the Torah?
It occurs...
Does it occur more often the later the books go?
In the later books, we're talking specifically like Chronicles, Esther, books like that, it tends to occur more.
Okay.
It does occur, though, in earlier books, like in Exodus.
Yes,
you will see it.
Right.
You will see it in Samuel. You'll see it in Kings. Extra-biblical literature in Qumran, it becomes more common.
Okay.
So it seems to be... And notice, well, if you guys know any Aramaic, it's kind of a characteristic. It's more common in Aramaic. So it may be due to Aramaic influence. Some suggest it's Aramaic influence. And remember... After the exile and in its aftermath, the people, Aramaic seemed to exert more of an influence on the language. But it also did in earlier times as well, because they lived next to Aramaic-speaking people.
Yeah.
All right.
So the Book of Daniel, Book of Esther,
you have Aramaic parts actually in Daniel and in Esther.
Yeah.
See.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So you'll see this kind of Aramaizing influence even in earlier books because. People live with them. So, for example, when Jacob goes to visit Laban, remember he goes up north where Aramaic was spoken. Well, you see kind of reflections of that in some of the things that Jacob says in the book of Genesis. Yeah, so does anyone have any other questions about anything in verse 11? All right, notice also as we're reading narrative how the author now structures his information. So he gives you this one sentence about Samuel, but now the rest of this section is not about Samuel. He doesn't pick Samuel up again until later. What happens next is he contrasts Samuel with Eli's sons. So notice verse 12. U b'nei Eli b'nei Belial, lo yadu et Adonai. Alright? Now, the sons of Eli were sons of worthlessness. Belial is a noun that means worthlessness. Alright? Sons of worthlessness, obviously you wouldn't translate it that way. Belial with a word like Ben or Ish is an idiom. We would probably translate it as they were scoundrels or they were worthless people, something like that. Alright? Hebrew does that a lot, like Ish Damim, a man of blood would be a bloodthirsty person. So here you have sons of worthlessness, they were scoundrels, or worthless sons, or something like that. Okay. Now notice how the author specifies what he means by that, or kind of expounds on it. Lo yadu et Adonai, they did not know Yahweh. And what does no mean here, do you think? They didn't know about him? Probably knew about him, right? It probably means... what we would say, they didn't believe in him. You know, they didn't follow him. Not that they didn't have knowledge about him, see? But remember, to know in Hebrew also indicates, can also mean to have a relationship with, remember? So that it's used as a euphemism for the marital relation between husband and wife. Okay? So notice, Samuel and the sons are contrasted here in verse 12. And now we get to this interesting kind of insight into how they were scoundrels, what they did specifically that got this author upset. Verse 13. U mishpat ha-kohanim et ha'am kolish zovek zevah uvana'ar ha-kohen kevashel ha-basar beha-mazleg shalosh ha-shinaim beyado. Okay. U mishpat. You guys all know this is judgment, but here it has a more general sense of custom. And the custom of the priests with the people. And the custom of the priests with the people. In better English, this is how the priests dealt with the people. Or this was a custom of the way that the priests dealt with the people. All right? Kol ish zoveh. Every man who offered a sacrifice. Sacrifice to sacrifice. Okay? And notice now, I'm going to translate it as a temporal clause because of I'm interpreting its relationship with what follows. Whenever a man offered a sacrifice, now here's the main clause, then the servant of the priest, the boy of the priest, it's actually the priest's boy, the boy of the priest would come, uba, ke ba shel, as the flesh was boiling. Kevashel is a pl infinitive construct with the preposition kof in front of it. So temporal. See, while the flesh was boiling. Notice habasar is the subject here. So the boy of the priest come as the flesh was boiling. Veha mizleg. Mizleg is a fork. Okay, and so and the fork of Shalosh, three Hashanaim, three teeth. Notice the three is in construct with Hashanaim. It doesn't have to be. It can be in the absolute form. It can be in construct. It can follow the noun. So you have a number of different options for numbers. So really you would say, with and the three-pronged fork in his hand, was in his hand. Okay, does anyone know what kind of clause that is with Veha, Mazleg, Shlosh HaShinayim Beyado? In this context, how would you label that clause? Any ideas? Notice what it's doing here. It's giving some circumstances surrounding the main action. So it's a circumstantial clause, see? So the boy of the priest would come while the flesh was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand would be kind of good English. Any questions about verse 13? All right, verse 14. Vehika bakior or vadud o vakalachat o vaparur ko asher ya'alech hamazleg yikach kohen bo kaka ya'asu l'kol Yisrael haba'im sham beshilo. Okay. Vehika, what's the root? Sim. Yeah, from naka, to strike. This is a hip feel. And it occurs very commonly here, to strike or to smite. All right. Notice it's a vav plus perfect. The situation is here being pictured, described as habitual action. This didn't just happen once or twice. This was habitual. So notice I'm translating it as would. All right. And I did that in the previous verse as well. So the boy would come with his three-pronged fork, and he would strike in the pot. Or in the pot, or in the pot, or in the pot. Those are four different words for pot, and I don't know what the difference is. Usually translations go in the pot, or in the kettle, or in the cauldron, or in the, I don't know, another kind of pot. I don't even know four words for pot. But that's what they are. Alright? So he would, notice he put the fork in it. Everything which Ya'aleh, which the fork brought up. So notice that this is a hifil imperfect from Allah. Everything which the fork would bring up. Notice when we're talking about habitual action in the past, the imperfect form is what's customarily used. So notice you have vav plus perfects and imperfects throughout this section, even though you're talking about past events. Does everybody see that? Okay. Whatever the fork would bring up, the priest would take away bow on it. See, yikach is from lakach. Okay, so whatever the fork would bring up, the priest would take away on it. It's kind of like modern day, you know, the carnivals. You take the, you put your 50 cents in and you put the scoop down, and whatever the scoop brings up, you know, the stuffed animal and the scoops are real shiny and smooth, so they never take anything. But these forks are stuck, and whatever they brought up, they took away. Okay, kaka, as thus Yaseh, they would do. Lekol Yisrael, for all Israel, Habaim, notice that that's a participle from Bo, modifies Kol Yisrael, all Israel, those who came there, Beshilo, at Shiloh. So anyone who came at Shiloh, this is the treatment that they receive. Now notice the author is kind of neutral on that. I think it's probably a disapproved practice. Alright, because if you remember from Leviticus, the priest got when the whole burnt offering had to be burnt first, and then the priest got the fat.
It was never boiled.
Right. Well, yeah, there's certain things that are boiled, but yeah, so we don't know what the practice is or what's behind this practice or how approved it was supposed to be or not, okay? But the point is meat was kind of rare, and the priests were probably taking more than their share, see? And so this is one kind of aberrant practice, I would say. The next one is even worse. Any questions about 14? Yes, Jason.
Is the view of it being something that could have been doubtful as to how good or wasn't, is that based off of the being prefaced with them being scoundrels?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And before, right, I'm suggesting that on the basis of what comes before, and then when we get to the end of this section, you'll see how the author labels this practice.
Okay.
But there's two things talked about. So first they do this. Now you have a gam here, another addition. Also, see verse 15. Also, b'terem yak tirun. Also, before they, here's from Qatar, this is a hifil imperfect. to, and it means to burn up in smoke. So this was the original holy smokers. Okay? But they were really the unholy smokers, now that I think about it. Gosh. Peter's a tough crowd. He didn't even crack a smile there. Okay. Even before they would burn up the fat, ha-Caleb, even before they would burn up the fat, see, and again, when you read Leviticus, there was the whole burnt offering, they burned it. Again, the hifil of Qatar. Okay. So even before they would burn up the fat, uva nahar ha-Kohen, the boy of the priest, the priest's boy, Uva, would come, the Amar, and he would say to the man, Hazoveth, the one sacrificing. Okay? Any questions about any of the forms so far? Are they all pretty clear? He would say to the man, the one sacrificing, Tanah. What's the root?
Natan.
Notice that this is a call imperative. It has a hey on it. And the hey on him, you usually see hey's on what forms? What forms of the volatives do you see hey's? The cohortatives especially, right? Here you have it on an imperative, and that's not uncommon. Remember, linguists suggest that it is action directed for the benefit of the speaker, or in view of the speaker. So notice the speaker is speaking in his own self-interest. Tenabasar, give flesh. Litzlot, this is, notice that this is what form? What kind of form? Infinitive construct from what kind of root? Third A root, right. Notice that oat ending tells you, with the lamed in front, you know it's an infinitive construct from tzallah, and it means to roast. So give flesh to roast, notice its purpose, give flesh in order to roast, la kohen, to the priest. Alright, so notice that they wanted raw meat so that they could roast it. I guess they could cook it to their preference then. Velo yikach, and he will not take from you basar, flesh mevushal, boiled. Notice that that's a pu'al participle. Above in verse 13, kevashel, you had the pl infinitive. Here's the pu'al participle functions as an attribute of the flesh. See, boiled flesh. He will not take from you boiled flesh, ki im chai, but only living, but he doesn't mean living, but only raw. Alright? And again, this is a practice that I think was really out of the boundaries. Okay? Any questions about verse 15?
So then it was kind of basically coming in that was the raw originally what he was supposed to take?
No. What was supposed to happen was the priest was supposed to prepare it. Again, if you read the first couple chapters of Leviticus, it gives the normal procedure, I think, for the burnt sacrifices. Yeah. They would prepare the meat, and then they would burn whatever portion of it, depending on what sacrifice. And then the priest would take apart from that. But here, what the priests were doing is before... it was boiled before it was smoked, you know, burnt up. They were asking for meat, raw.
Oh, okay.
See, they were asking for the raw meat that wasn't part of the sacrifice.
Yeah, the whole point is that God is supposed to get the first fruit.
God gets
whatever,
the first.
Whatever right. It is, and then the priest would get the secondary.
Right. See, the priest takes what's left from them. And I think, you know, it was supposed to be, in a sense, kind of eaten in community as well. So you have the priests going against that. And there's a reason, obviously, you know, these whole first chapters talk about the difference between Samuel and Eli's son. So notice he's making this contrast very clear. Okay? Verse 16. Vayomer elav ha'ish kater ya'tirun kayom ha'chelev v'kach l'kaka asher te'ava nafsheka v'amar lo ki ata titain v'im lo lakakti bechoska. Now notice that this is a vav consecutive, but it's part of a conditional clause. I'll end with this verse because everyone has to leave. If the man said to him, kater, notice that that's a pl, infinitive absolute. If the man said to him, they must, you know, certainly they must burn up kayom first. Okay, this is very interesting. Notice, in English we would say first. Literally it's as today. But if you look at other places, Genesis where Esau sells his birthright, for example, Jacob uses Kayom as first to sell your birthright. So here Kayom means first. So if the man would say to him, certainly they should first burn up the fat, the kach, then take for yourself. Kach is again an imperative call from lakach. Then take for yourself a share as te'aveh nafshecha, as your heart desires. Te'aveh is a piel, imperfect, third feminine singular from ava, aleph, vav, he. So if the man said to him, they must certainly burn first the fat, then take for yourself as your soul desires. So notice he's telling them what's supposed to happen. If he said that, v'amar, then he would say to him, and notice now, I want you guys to look at, with that low, look at the low, and then under 16b, there's another reading here. Many manuscripts, Qumran, Septuagint, Vulgate, rather than having to him, have Lamed Aleph, no, notice the Karei wants you to read no rather than to him. And so a lot of translations will have no rather than to him. So it would be like this. He would say, no, the atah. But now, titain, you must give it. Ve'im lo, and if not, notice that the words, and if you do not give it, are kind of left out. But if not, lakakti. Notice that that's a perfect. But the force is, if not, I will take it bechoska, by force. Chazak means to be strong. So notice you have a perfect here that seems to indicate a very strong assertion. If not, I will take it by force. All right. So notice that the priests didn't even make a request to take it raw. They actually demanded it. Okay, any questions about verse 16? Yes, in the MT it's and he said to him, but notice we're talking about something that seemed to happen more than once. So it seems to be, I'm reading it, the relationship between that first clause and where it starts out, ve'amar. I'm suggesting that the first clause is conditional. If he would say to him, or when he would say to him, no, we must do it this way first, here's how the priest, the na'ar would respond. If you want the number on this, let me tell you, Sim. If you look in Juan under 167G or 166P, it talks about conditional clauses. And
so, go ahead. I'm sorry. So you follow the apparatus, and he said, then he said no instead of to be.
Oh, right, right. He would say no. Rather than he would say to him. You could have it either way. I'm just saying, notice that there's two different readings, and in a sense, the low, no, makes a lot of sense here. Because he would insist not to do it.